Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular show. I want you to know that we truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, to my right, as my co-host today, this undercover gentleman with the shades, for those of you on Facebook Live, is Art Torres.
Hey, what's up, everybody? What's up, the world? The reason I have these on is because I've lost my prescription glasses, and this is as close as it gets. Plus, it keeps me incognito. Especially after today's subject.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was going to say, is that so with today's subject, he knows that he might say some things that he might later go, I'm glad I was undercover.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and that topic that we're talking about is ending the sexless marriage epidemic.
And I hate when that happens.
Yes. Well, according to the National Survey of Sexual Health and Behavior, 20% of married couples are only having sex once a month or less, which is what they categorize as a sexless marriage. And the number of reported sexless marriages has quadrupled in the last 20 years. I'm having trouble even saying that. It's
the thought of it that messes you up, Alan.
Exactly. So, and our guest's new book is called Living an Orgasmic Life, and it's filled with lessons and practical exercises to take your sex life from non-existent to fulfilling, or hopefully to, oh my goodness. So our guest,
I love that.
Janae Pellette is a sex and intimacy coach, tantra teacher, sexological body worker, and author. Her book, Living an Orgasmic Life, is an Amazon number one bestseller and a must-read for all women, which is what it says when you look it up as far as at Amazon. But as far as I'm concerned, I think it's also a must-read for men who want to bring pleasure to the woman in their life and the one that they love.
I'm going to have to check that one out at the library.
Definitely. Jeanette, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here with you all.
Well, I can imagine that you get a lot of questions based on just the title alone of your book. So to start off with, tell us a little bit about, what made you decide that this was an area that you were going to research enough to put out a book on the subject?
Well, interestingly, it wasn't through research, really. It was through my own life journey and experience. So I'm a lawyer by training, a healthcare lawyer. Grew up on the East Coast in New York, and I spent 26 years being a lawyer working in the healthcare field, but also living in a sexless marriage. Stayed in that marriage for a variety of reasons, including the fact that we had two children who are now adults, and it just didn't feel appropriate to actually leave. But my husband and I stopped having sex maybe after my second child was born when I was in my early 30s. And the reason that we stopped having sex, which is sometimes the reason couples start having sex, is because sex was very painful and uncomfortable for me. And I didn't really know how to deal with it. And I didn't really have anyone to talk to about it because I had so much discomfort and shame myself. So when I finally left the marriage, when I was in my late 40s, I knew that I had to really look at what was going on with my own sexuality and just take a really deep dive into it. And that is what actually led me into my change of life, change of career path, transition from living on the East Coast to moving to California, and deciding to become a sex and intimacy educator and coach. So the book is very vulnerable. The book is part memoir about my own experiences growing up and the struggles and challenges, the trauma that I experienced both as a child, a young adult, and as a married woman, as well as the case studies of all of the clients or many of the clients that I've worked with. And then, as you said, some practical tools and tips to be able to really heal your relationship with sex, because a lot of us are closed down around our sexuality for a variety of reasons. And then be able to actually start experiencing pleasure and sensuality and sexuality again.
So when you talk about your own situation, you were talking about the fact that there was some physical pain, but did you find that through in talking to your clients, as well as the research that you did, that for the majority of people, it's more of an emotional or a psychological reason that they end up not having sex?
Well, yes. And even for me, the physical pain was connected to emotional and psychological issues, as physical pain is often connected to.
Right.
So most of the work for couples that are really struggling with sexuality in sexless marriages, and for women who are having painful sex or with intercourse, a lot of it, and men who are struggling with erection issues, which is another reason why people are in sexless marriages, a lot of it, you know, probably 90% of it is really based on emotional wounding that then causes physical symptoms to occur in our body. So yes, so much of it is emotional wounding, and it's very much psychological.
Interesting.
Okay, so when you're talking about the physical pain, I know you also talk about in the book, and you refer to it as trauma. So how does the physical trauma impact the woman's sex life, and how can they, you know, do they need to heal those wounds first, and then, you know, all of a sudden they not only aren't feeling the physical pain, but they don't have the psychological issues that were hindering them from enjoying themselves?
Yeah, well, I mean, what happens in the body, so for example, if you're having painful intercourse, you have a condition called vaginismus, which basically means that the vagina, which is a muscle, starts to contract upon penetration, because maybe it hurt once or twice, or maybe you weren't actually ready for intercourse. But what happens is the body starts having a memory of contraction, right? So the body starts associating sex with pain. And very often the body just goes into a pain, anxiety type of cycle. So this happens with my clients all the time, right? Just thinking about the fact that if we start kissing and making out, it might end up with into intercourse, which I know is going to be painful. These are all projections, right? That creates anxiety in the body, and the anxiety in the body creates contraction. So the body can't relax, the woman's body can't relax in order to be able to experience sensation and pleasure, or to be in a place of expansion, which is what you need for high arousal as well. And we're also in our head worrying about and thinking about and projecting what's actually going to happen. Right. So we basically talk ourselves into it, and our body is smart. Our body is just trying to protect us from the experiences that we've had that have been painful in the past. And so the body's answer is like, well, I'm just going to close up because that has protected me, if you will, from having pain in the past, right? So that's a very common experience that women have. It could be from a variety of different traumas. It could be from, a lot of it is from sexual abuse. Women who have been sexually abused and men who have been sexually abused have a lot of issues with respect to their sexuality. It could be from some experience around physical wounding. There are actually surgeries like cesarean sections and hysterectomies. All of these cause scar tissue forms in the body, and that starts to make sex more painful. So there's a variety of episiotomies, for example. A lot of women after having birth, they tend to do this less frequently now in certain parts of the country. They have an episiotomy, which causes a lot of scar tissue. That's physical trauma that women experience as well. So there's a lot of different types of trauma that a body can experience, but it can all relate to and all end up in physical pain.
I got a question for you. So are you saying that, it sounds like you're saying that it could be somewhat psychological more than even actually something really being painful. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Right. There definitely can be a psychological. There's a big psychological component of it. If in fact a woman is not, let's say, feeling comfortable with a particular partner, or if they're angry with their partner and there's been a lot of resentment built up, the body can shut down, right? The body responds to our emotional state as well. There, you know, the whole mind-body integrative approach to medicine and to health is that everything is connected as one. And the same is true of sexuality. You know, most men who are dealing with, and I know you have a lot of your listeners are men as well, right? So most men who are dealing with erection issues, whether it's early ejaculation or erectile dysfunction, those are psychological. They are not physiological, even though we have some, quote, drugs that treat them.
Mm-hmm. You're not talking about me and Alan, are you?
Component.
You're not talking about me and Alan because we're good.
I'm glad to hear that.
when you mentioned that in your own case that you started, not having sex, after your second child. And one of the thoughts that I had, because I've heard it from other people, that what is the deal with the psychological thing that apparently happens to men that after their wife has finished having children, that somehow the desire changes or goes away, or they somehow look at things differently. Share a little bit about the psychological impact of that and how they can fix that.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. Actually, I just ordered this. There's a new book that just came out around men's sexual desire. I think it came out in January, which tries to get rid of all of the myths around men's sexuality. And I'm interested in reading it because I've worked with a lot of men as well, and I can see that we sometimes hold them to a standard that isn't true. But I think what you're talking about, Alan, is what typically we might call the Madonna whore complex, mm-hmm. which is a Freudian term, yeah. right?
Yes.
Which essentially under the Madonna whore complex is that basically, you know, men want to marry the Madonna, but they want to have sex with the whore. And what often happens for both women and men, by the way, because it affects both of them, this whole, again, these are all these the stories that we have been told and the messages that we have grown up with, right, which all really affects our adult sexuality. What happens is that women and men, they sort of have a crisis of identity. Like, who am I? Am I a mother who's nurturing, whose breasts are being used for nourishment for my child who just carried in my womb, you know, this new beautiful being? Where is the lover inside of me? How do I find that again? And I think this is what happens with men. For some men, it's like, wow, it's really hard for me to see my beautiful wife who just mothered our children as a sexual object again, as a sexual being again. So that's a very common experience that couples have. you know, especially after childbirth. Plus, they're absolutely exhausted. They're exhausted. They're stressed out. They're up late at night. I mean, it's hard, right, to have any amorous feelings for each other when you're so exhausted and when women are so oxytocin overstimulated because they're constantly getting touched. And what they usually say is, like, the last thing I want is my husband to touch me. I just want to be in a bath by myself for 2 hours. You know?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, well, how do we deal with this? Well, you know, one of the ways we deal with it is we talk about it. You know, the reasons that so many couples are in sexless marriages is by the time they realize they're in a sexless marriage, not that it's too late, it's not too late, but what's happened is they've never communicated about what's actually going on with them, right? And so the first thing to do is just to sit down with your spouse and say, like, wow, like, look what's happening right now. I'm feeling less desire for you, and it's feeling a little bit weird. Like, maybe I feel like I shouldn't follow your breath because you're still nursing, and, you know, and I'm having my own identity crisis here. So just talking about it just starts to get all the gremlins out, right? And we get to be vulnerable and honest with each other. And that actually creates connection and intimacy. When we can actually tell each other what's going on for us emotionally, we feel closer with each other.
I got a question for you. So let me ask you this. So what kind of mind shifts are necessary to I guess to have, you know, more satisfaction and fun and a better, you know, a better sex life? What is your, because for me, you know, I've got 7 kids, so I obviously didn't get the notice that things weren't good. But on the average, you know, on the average, what can a couple do as they're listening to you to improve that? Because I know a lot of times it has to do with communication. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you know, you go through a relationship and you're like, okay, we got enough problems. Now I'm going to say, hey, you know, we're not having sex. That's the last thing you want to say to your wife. That'll, you know, start a forest fire. But what is your suggestion?
Well, I mean, I think there are ways to say it without being, you know, blaming or shaming, right? I think what we can say is like, well, you know, I mean, really what's happening is like, I miss you. I miss the physical connection. That's a different statement than, hey, I want to have sex tonight, right?
Absolutely.
Especially speaking to a woman's emotions, because most women need, again, this is a generalization, and you'll hear I'm making some generalizations because it's true for many men as well, but most women really need to feel the emotional connections with their partner before they have a physical interaction. And for some men, they actually feel emotionally connected after they've had sex. So there's a little bit of a, we're sort of in a circular pattern here, right? 10-22, if you will. But, you know, I think it's not only what you say, but how you say it. And what is it that you really mean underneath that? What you really mean underneath that is like, man, I really miss being with you. I miss our intimacy. I miss our connection. Well, I would say there are a lot of different ways in which you can have a connection, a physical connection with your partner that may or may not involve intercourse. And putting a lot more options on the table for both of you also takes some of the pressure off. And if you've been in a place where you've been disconnected for a while, then maybe you just need to start slow. Like, maybe you just want to get naked and hold each other and cuddle, or just have a high school makeout session with your clothes on to build up desire. There's a lot of different things that we can do to create the desire, because typically what's happening is there's a lack of desire. We're stressed out. We're too busy. We're not really thinking about sex. There's no desire. And most often what happens is somebody says, hey, you want to do it tonight? And, you know, maybe that works for you, but for a lot of people, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. They want to be romanced. They want to feel desire. They want to know on Wednesday that your partner is thinking about you, right? So I think a lot of this is about creating the environment in which you want to come together, as opposed to having any sense of obligation or the need to have service sex, which, again, happens very frequently and ends up turning off people, both women and men.
You know,
does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And I love the fact that really what you've said is that, but it still all starts with communication. because I think that if one person, you know, that first time that someone goes, not tonight, and it could be for either party, the male or the female, but the first time they do that, if it's taken wrong by the other side, now all of a sudden, you know, there's a blow to the ego. So, you know, if it's the mm-hmm. female, I think she's okay. Well, you know, now because I just had a child, I'm not pretty. Or for the man, it's like, okay, well, now you're giving all the time to the kids and stuff. What about me? You know, so if it's a blow right. to the ego, I think it pushes people a little further away every time they don't communicate that, you know, look, it's just because I've spent the last, you know, 36 hours up dealing with all of these things. And, you know, I would love to, and let's communicate that we're going to set it up to happen really soon, but just not right now. But anyway, my point is I love the fact that you're saying it all starts with communication so that we don't start kind of pushing things in the wrong direction as we push people further apart, rather than showing that we're still a team and we're still working together.
Can I add a footnote to that?
Please.
For sure. Do not fall asleep.
Oh, God.
And I'm guilty of that, because when I was raising my seven kids, you know, I was working two jobs. I mean, it's funny because I'm listening to all this and I'm thinking back. I remember my ex-wife. It was hilarious because I would fall asleep in the middle of the whole motion. Boy, did I pay a price for that one. Unbelievable.
Okay, now for Facebook listeners, you now see why he's wearing dark glasses.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
But anyway, yes, my point is that, yes, I couldn't agree more. The idea of communication, that all of it starts with communication, and then everything after that, once you're communicating, now you're just being honest with each other, and as long as you're still being honest about the fact that, you know, the love is still there, the desire is there, just not right at this moment. Now, but the other question is that we know that as many of us get older, that there are some chemical things that happen. And, you know, so what are some of the causes, both for men and women, as far as when they're starting to lose the desire? Now it's after the kids are gone. You don't have that excuse, but our hormones are changing, you know, starting with women, and then we'll come to men. So when the woman starts to lose their desire for sex, how can she reclaim her libido?
Well, it's a really great question. There's been a gazillion, there's been a number of books, and there's a lot of research around, new research around this, which is really kind of fascinating in a variety of different ways, some of which really debunks the whole hormone. I mean, yes, hormones can have a role. There's no question. Lowered estrogen, lowered progesterone can definitely, affect a woman's desire. But one of the things that we also know from some of the new research that's come out is that women get bored extremely easily, very easily, way more than men. So some new data shows that men can do the same thing over and over again and be totally happy, and women get bored very, very quickly.
Wait, so let's make a note of this.
So we have
footnote, another footnote for us. Thank you.
Yeah, guys, be taking right. notes now.
Be taking notes, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to keep things interesting in the bedroom. And this is like a huge problem, because we get into routines and the routines get boring, right? So when you're free of kids, actually you have the best opportunity to be able to have a voracious sex life, because you can make all the noise that you want. You can run around naked in your house and you don't have to worry about disturbing the children, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, like, we're already bored. It's like, oh man, I've been having sex with this person for 20 years and I just have to do something different. And the reason, I mean, this is a weird thing to say, but the reason that we know this is true both for men and women is because how often are people having affairs because there's somebody new in their life that who is desiring them, which is not something that you feel normally in a long-term relationship after a period of time, right?
Sure.
And all of a sudden that libido that was dead is like raring to go, right? We all know those situations. We've all either had those experiences or have friends who have had those experiences as well, which is why it's much more psychological and emotional than I believe it really is physical. So some of the things that we need to be able to do is, you know, obviously we need to have more variety. We need to shake things up. Mm-hmm. We need to get very curious about each other. Sometimes I'll tell a couple, okay, just make believe you've never met each other before.
Mm-hmm.
And just like have a night of like R&D where you just get to explore each other's bodies with no expectations, no goals. Just explore. Try something different. You know, there are fantastic books. There are apps that you can put on your phone with all of these different types of, you know, ways in which you can connect with each other, have sex. It's not even about different positions. I feel like the different position things is really overblown, you know,
especially when you
one
get older.
Position after another position after another position, it doesn't start to make that much of a difference. What it is doing something different.
Right.
So maybe we're going to have a sensual feast with each other. Maybe we're going to get naked and put chocolate sauce all over each other. You know, maybe we're going to have sex out in the woods. We're going to find a place out in the woods because it's something that turns us both on or turns one of us on, right? Really trying to understand like different ways that you can explore sexuality is the key to be able to have a very successful long-term relationship.
Right. And it sounds like the catchphrase is do something different so they don't want to do someone different.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like
you know,
it.
Alan's a poet and he doesn't know it. Is that incredible?
And so now the same question as far as, you know, for men, and I know that, you know, as we get older, our testosterone goes down. There's less of a desire. What are some of the things that men can do to increase their libido? Or it's not necessarily what they're doing, but for the wives out there, what are some of the things that both people can do to keep his desire up and his libido up?
Well, I think it's some of the things that we talked about before, and I think it's also redefining what intimacy looks like in your relationship, right? So intimacy doesn't have to be just having sexual intercourse, just, you know, we call it PIV, penis and vagina sex, right? That is not what sex is. Sex can be a range of different things. And you know, taking the pressure off, especially for a man who is struggling with erection issues, right? Just taking the pressure off and saying like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to perform. Let me just give
you know what? We
a lot of men have a hard time receiving pleasure from a woman.
Hmm.
And so, you know, just be able to be in a place of not having to give back, right? Just being able to accept touch all over your body. You know, I always recommend for people, if they're not already doing this, like one of the things that really increases libido is exercise. Getting in your body increases your libido. Whatever type of exercise, walking, you know, mm-hmm. running, playing tennis, swimming, whatever it is, hiking, biking, whatever it is that you're into. It doesn't have to be vigorous, but it does get the blood circulating.
Sure, exercise is good.
It does get the blood flowing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
And the more you're in your body, the more you can connect with your desire. And I also think, like, you know, after 20 years of marriage, if you haven't had these conversations, right, you need to talk about, like, what else would you like to do? What's a fantasy of yours that you've never experienced before? There's all of these, you know, there's this concept called core erotic theme. It was actually coined by a man named Jack Morin, who is no longer with us. And he wrote this book called The Erotic Mind. And our core erotic theme consists of both our peak sexual experiences that we've had in our life, as well as our very, very strong fantasies and desires. And when we look at core erotic theme, it's less about what actually happens, but more about the emotion that you want to go to for sex. And right. Many people don't actually get to experience that. Because they've never really looked at it from that perspective. They've never really looked at what is the emotion that I really want to go to for sex? Like, what is my turn on?
Mm-hmm.
And exploring that can be a very powerful thing to do as a couple, and can open up the doorway to having a lot of different types of sexual experiences surrounding what that core erotic theme is, or what that emotional component of sex is for you.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I know that anticipation is such a great thing, that sometimes the anticipation as it builds and stuff is part of the excitement, and which I think is great. Now we're going to take a break. For those of you that want to follow along, if you're sitting in a computer, you can open up another window. You can go to the website of www.powerofpleasure.com. You can open up another site. You can follow along. You can see what it is we're talking about. And we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I'd like to know a little bit more about Tantra. So I know
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. What is that? That sounds like a secret recipe.
Yeah. Well, it may be a secret recipe. So
I like the way this girl talks.
Yeah. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we want to learn a little more about Tantra.
Absolutely.
Stay with us.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Janae Pellet. And with me is Art Torres. And when we went to break, the question is, what is Tantra and how can it improve our sex life?
Such a beautiful question. So, when most people think of Tantra, what do you guys think of? Like, what first comes to mind?
Indian food. Indian food.
Indian food.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, well, and for me, it's, I think of almost like a slow form of touch, you know, where there's just different slow, take your time touch, but I don't really know much more about it.
Beautiful. So Tantra is actually a very ancient spiritual practice, very, very ancient, but what we practice today, we call more urban or neo-Tantra. Which is the westernized, if you will, modernized form of Tantra. But the principles of Tantra, Tantra means to weave. So,
Say it again. It's what?
Tantra means to weave. In Sanskrit, which is the language of Hindu language, it means to weave, W-E-A-V-E.
Oh.
And what we're weaving together is our physical body, our energetic body, our emotional self. We connect it, we weave it together with our partner, and or we also weave it together with any type of spiritual belief or being that you have. For me, it's like the universe. For some people, it's God or goddesses or the divine, right? It has a very spiritual component to it. The basic principles of Tantra, though, Alan, you were right, is to be very, very present. So to be present, you do have to slow everything down. to the extent that you can actually experience sensations in your body, experience your own connection with your sexual energy, and then bring that into the sexual energy or the energy field of another, of your partner.
Sure.
We also have, you know, Tantra has no goals and no expectations. I often say that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. That, of course, makes you be very present. If I don't care whether I have an orgasm or I have no goal to make my partner have an orgasm, then I can just be with exactly what's happening and allow things to shift from moment to moment, which makes it also a much more powerful experience. So being very present with each other, not having goals or expectations with each other. We use some basic principles of using breathing, like breath, sound, and movement. Because one of the things that we try to do in Tantra is to be able to connect with and move our sexual energy through our bodies. You know, our body is energy. We are all made out of energy cellularly. This is a physics thing.
Yeah,
and
I get
there's
that.
Energy
I get that.
All around us, right? Energy surrounds us. So in Tantra, what we do is we move our energy through what we call the chakras, which some of you may have heard of,
sure.
Which are these energy centers that runs through our body. Perpendicular, they are perpendicular, not perpendicular, like they're next to the spine, right?
Right.
I think that's perpendicular to the spine. Spinal column, it's like there's this hollow tube that goes from the top of our head through the center of our body, the center channel, all the way through to the perineum, which is the area between, for men, their testicles and their anus, and for women, between the vagina and the anus or perineum, right? The central channel. And what we're doing is we use breathing techniques, we use sound, we make noise, we move our bodies,
sure.
And we use touch in order to really generate this sexual energy throughout our body.
Wow, that's very good. I like that. I got a question for you. So, I'm sitting here thinking, I guess the biggest question is, how do you actually live the orgasmic life, especially, you know, if you're single or maybe just have a partner or maybe you have a partner that's disabled and is unable to really have sex. How does that work?
Well, I mean, to me, living an orgasmic life is different than having orgasms. Living an orgasmic life to me means that you're really present, that you're in the flow of your life, that you're in a place where you're not struggling, right? There's a lot of ease and grace in your life. And I believe that happens from being able to connect to your sexual energy.
Hmm.
So, you know, I believe that our sexual energy, both for women and men, is like the central core of our being. And it has an impact on so many different aspects. So to the extent that even if you have a partner who is disabled and you can't have sex with for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
you can still have, first of all, you can still have connections to yourself, because I always believe that we need to start with connecting to our own body. Right. It's like it's hard to attunement is another important piece of really building up an erotic connection. Attunement. Right.
Sure.
Just like as mothers and fathers, we attune to our children.
Sure.
We also need to attune to our partner. But you can't attune to somebody else until you're connected to yourself. Right.
If you can't pleasure yourself, you can't pleasure someone else for sure. You're 100% correct.
Then. Right, exactly. And if you're not in your own body and aware of what's going on in your body, it's very hard for you to understand and be aware and attuned to what's going on in somebody else's body as well. The wonderful thing about Tantra is that you can have very intimate and powerful sexual connections with a partner without really even having to take your clothes off. And there's a lot of ways in which we have these very intense breathing practices, even eye gazing, you know, which everybody, you know, sometimes like laughs at. Eye gazing can be very, very powerful. Why? Because you slow down. So often we don't look at each other in the in we don't look at our partner and other people in their eyes, because it's a very vulnerable and intimate space to be in, right?
Sure.
But if you can really, like, you know, I did a session with a couple the other day where all I had them do for most of the session was just be in connection with each other through looking at each other and then some gentle hugging. And they were like, that was the most powerful experience they've ever had, because we don't often do that when we're being sexual with a partner or being intimate, but it opens you up to being very, very vulnerable. And vulnerability is what creates intimacy and what creates connection. And Tantra is just a beautiful practice to be able to drop in a very slow way to into that space and be very vulnerable and intimate with a partner without it having to get very sexual.
Now, we have some questions that have come in that have been sent in ahead of time. Again, I want to thank those that take the time. Oftentimes, it's people who work during the day, and so they send these in. We ask the question, and they listen later on through iTunes or wherever they're subscribed. This one reads, "My heart was pounding reading the summary of your book on the Answers for the Family site. Married for 2 years and now in early sixth of time. Your quote, neither of us wanted to deal with the issues or each other any longer, was exactly how my husband and I felt. Your story makes me feel as though I am not over the hill yet, so I ordered your book with the intent of being open to a new perspective. Thank you." And this is from Charlene in Texas.
Awesome. Thank you, Charlene. That makes me really happy. Yeah, you know, I had my sexual awakening in my late 40s. And I'm 59 now. And believe me, my life is not over the hill. I'm single. I've been in relationships over the last, I've been separated for 10 years. I've been in some relationships over the last 10 years. They've all been super juicy. I have gone through periods of celibacy. And, you know, I actually believe, Charlene, and to all of your listeners, that somebody was just telling me, we were just having this conversation the other day, that couples in their 50s and 60s, women in their 50s and 60s, I particularly see this in new relationships, have some of the best sex in their life, the best sex in their life for so many different reasons. First of all, we know, for those of us who have been shut down, we know what it's like to be shut down, and to be able to awaken is a very, very powerful thing. We also have a lot more confidence in our body. We're able to ask for what we want. So much of the time we don't get what we want because we can't ask for what we want. But as we get older, we're like, you know, like,
I make sure to ask. That helps, Shani.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Like, yep. I get
you
it.
You know.
100%. Yeah. If you don't ask, you don't get. Yep.
Exactly. You know, maybe we have 30 great years ahead of us. Who knows? Like, I'm going to make the best of those 30 years, and damn, I'm going to make sure that I get what I want. So I'm excited that she's going to read the book, and I know that she's going to learn a lot about herself, and she'll be able to take that into new relationships.
So we have another listener question or comment that's come in. This one reads, "I'm a drug and alcohol use disorder counselor in Southern California, dealing primarily with college-age women. In all of my training, conferences, and discussions with my colleagues, never once has the issue of sexless relationships surfaced. Sex for this age group is a huge deal, and I'm shocked to think that 20% of them are suffering silently and too embarrassed to talk about it. I personally believe the level of anxiety, insecurity, and depression that would result from a condition such as this would contribute to their insecurity and addiction. Please comment on how you feel this is affecting college-age women and those struggling with inappropriate drug and alcohol use." And this is from Helen in Los Angeles.
What we know is that it's actually the younger generation that is having the least amount of sex. It's actually the ages between about 22 and 31 or 32 in which the statistics are showing that sex, the amount of sex that people are having has dropped significantly. And there may be a lot of different reasons for that. But what I want to say to this listener is, and I know she knows this, right? Like, anybody who has experienced, is having addiction issues, obviously has a background where they've experienced some sort of trauma, whether it's emotional trauma or physical abuse, or I don't know what it is, but we know that addiction arises because of traumatic experiences that we've had. And we also know that one of the best ways to be able to help somebody overcome addiction is through connection, right? Through connection.
Sure.
And through intimacy. And those of us, those people, those who are experiencing addiction feel very disconnected. They feel disconnected from themselves, and they feel disconnected from other people, and they use the addiction in order for them to feel alive again, to feel that connection. And so it doesn't surprise me, you know, it doesn't surprise me that people are either having no sex if they're struggling with addiction and there's a lot of depression and trauma. Right. That makes plenty of sense to me.
Sure.
And it also doesn't surprise me if they're having if having a lot of sex, because that's another way in which trauma, sexual trauma, will show up in people having a lot of different partners as well. Or, you know, doing very risky behaviors so that they are no longer numbed out and they can actually feel something, even if it's cutting themselves or, you know, overdosing.
Sure.
So I think what we see in college students, especially around women, is that there's a lot of faking of orgasms, a lot. It's a very, very high prevalence of women faking orgasms, and many of them are not actually having orgasms because they're not actually having the connection that some of them need in order to feel safe enough to be able to let go.
You think that's like a millennial thing with these new generation of kids with the videos and all the, you know, stuff? They don't spend enough time being, you know, in present with the partner as they get older. What do you think of that?
I believe that to be true. I mean, just from what I've heard, what I've read, some of the data discredits that, but they haven't really been able to pinpoint what it is. But just understanding that when we're having more intimacy with our cell phones than we are with the person sitting across the table from us at a restaurant, that creates disconnection, right? There's no way that you can feel connected to somebody when you're sitting there on your cell phone texting your friends. It's a different level of connection, but it's not the same as sitting and looking at somebody and being vulnerable and really feeling their heart. That doesn't happen over, you know, cell phones. So I do think that we are creating a generation of millennials who are much more disconnected. They're disconnected from themselves. They're disconnected from their sexuality. What we're also seeing is, like, they have a lot more embarrassment. In some ways, they have a lot more embarrassment and shame about their bodies. You know, I read an article that gyms serving millennials are taking away the big locker rooms and the open showers and creating more private cubicles and spaces. It's just ridiculous in my mind, right? Because what we want to be teaching is, like, bodies are beautiful and we can embrace all kinds of different types of bodies. But there is, like, a backlash with some of the younger generation, no question. And in some ways, they're more open. In some ways, there's more pansexuals. They're much more gender fluid. You know, it's an interesting mix, right? There are a lot more millennials who, not even millennials, I don't know, the generation before that, who say, yeah, I'm, like, kind of gender fluid. Yeah, I like women. I like men. I'm not sure what I am. So it's a whole mix that's happening.
Well, and this next question follows what you just said perfectly. And this question reads, what about those of us who discover that our mate is attracted to someone of the same sex after being in a conventional marriage for most of their life? And this is from Anonymous in San Jose, California.
Yeah. So I think that that's not so uncommon as people get older and have a better sense of what they want, especially if they feel like they've been trapped in a relationship or a marriage in which they were really not being sexually fulfilled. I mean, basically somebody who's been in the closet for 20 years, whether it's a woman or a man. And it's a challenging, you know, it's definitely a challenging situation. It does not have to mean the end of the marriage if the relationship feels strong and if there's a way in which, you know, it can evolve so that your spouse gets to have his or her needs met and you get to have your needs met as well, right? It kind of depends on, is this person strongly, you know, they only like the other gender, or are they bisexual? They like both genders.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can imagine, I've worked with some clients where they've had experiences like that, and it's like, it rocks your world. It definitely rocks your world. And as the spouse who is not the favored one, right? Mm-hmm. If your husband decides he's actually gay, then you really feel like, what have I been doing for my whole life? And, you know, has all of this been a sham? Has our sex life been our sham? Right? It can feel like a very big betrayal, like an affair can feel like a very, very big betrayal. But there's also opportunity there for understanding and compassion and for growth and figuring out, is there enough in the context of the relationship, and does it make sense to keep the marriage going, or does it make sense to start both of you to start your lives over again? I've seen it work both ways.
Well, Janae, I got to tell you, first of all, thank you so much for coming on. I can assume people can get the book anywhere. You know, in regards to its, you know, Living an Orgasmic Life. This has been so intriguing that time has flown by, and unfortunately, we're out of time.
Yeah, I wish we had another hour. That's
exactly.
Amazing stuff.
Yes. So, yes, and again, so for people, if you want to get more information, I know that the website is powerofpleasure.com. Please check it out. Check out the book. It's called Living an Orgasmic Life. Thank you so much for joining us and for really sharing quite a bit of information on this subject.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for asking great questions, and thank you all for your listeners for asking great questions.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar. Tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Razia Khan to discuss Trapped by Your Mind, but using NLP to let go of limiting beliefs and transform your world in a very positive way. And please visit...
Put that together with Orgasmic Life, no?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you can. This would work.
I like this lady.
Yeah. But for everybody out there, visit our archives of past interviews. You can go to answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through again, iTunes, through Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, and our newest network now is iHeartRadio has now picked this up.
Hey,
so
hey.
You can subscribe to us there as well. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word.
Please do.
Art, thanks for being here.
Thanks again.
All right. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the
Peace.
Family.
Peace.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.